Hi, I'm Max Goller.
And I'm Pat LaMarche.
Welcome to Sacred Legions, a podcast. We're excited to introduce our guest and their chosen partner for today's podcast. Our guest is Diane Davis, most recognizable as the inspiration for a character in the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical, Come From Away.
And with you, Diane, today is Julie Dowd. Hi, Julie. Welcome to the show. Welcome both of you. Julie, you were selected. First of all, let me explain what Sacred Legions is real quick and what you guys are here for, which is you are secular saints. And Max had come up with this idea for a podcast that would stem from Kurt Vonnegut's famous line, that there are saints out there, people behaving decently. Secular saints behave decently in an indecent society. So we have both run into so many people like yourselves, people who see the world for what it is and think, hey, I can help. And Diane, I met you a while ago and I was just absolutely thrilled and honored to be able to know you. And when I asked Diane for someone who it has been a partner with her along this journey, Julie, she mentioned you. And so that's why you're with our show. But let's talk to Diane first.
Hi.
So Diane, take us back to 9/11 and tell us about your thoughts of that day.
On September 11th, I was a school teacher at Gander Academy. And if people have seen the musical, it's much like is represented on stage. It was a crazy hot day. It was the second week of school and everything was normal, except that our bus drivers were on strike and right. Our secretaries and whatnot. I found out in school from a parent coming to pick up her kids that something had happened in New York. It wasn't until the lunch hour when we went home and were able to turn on the TV that I saw what happened in New York. And wow. My whole experience is a long story. But basically, I helped coordinate the staff of my school. 60 teachers, along came substitute teachers and retired teachers and spouses and junior high age children of teachers and parents of students. And for 4 days and nights, we housed 770 people in the school, meeting their most basic needs as best we could as a group of volunteers.
I'm going to just jump in for a minute. So just for someone who hasn't seen the play, and it is available now on different streaming services, Come From Away, which is fantastic. But for people who aren't aware, the airspace, I was live on the air at the time that the planes hit. And of course, Gander's an hour and a half later. Yep. So it was later in the morning for you. I was still in my morning show as a disc jockey. And when the planes hit, the U.S. airspace was shut down. So all of these transatlantic flights that were already more than halfway to North America had to go somewhere.
Or less than halfway from North America. So we had flights land in Gander that had taken off from the United States and had to be turned back. I see. And the midpoint of the Atlantic was kind of the decision-making situation. So a number of flights went back to Europe, a number of flights had to come to Canada. The United States was closed. And in our small town of Gander, population less than 10,000, we have a very large, people say that we have a very large airport. That's not true. Our airport is lovely, but it's not large. But we have very large runways. We have lots of them. And we were able to accommodate 38 wide-body aircraft on that day. And because of that, including the 770 who stayed at my school, Gander Academy, almost 7,000 people landed in a town of less than 10,000 people over a period of about 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours, because they were already in the air.
So the other 6,000 or so people, they were matriculated out into the community? They went to people's homes?
Our community and surrounding communities. So about half of the passengers stayed in Gander, in churches, church halls, schools, the college. 75 people slept in our fire hall.
What was the evolution of that like?
Yeah, the rest went out into even smaller communities and even stayed in two church camps. The church camps, it was September 11th. The church camps had just shut down in August. All the canoes and all the everything was put away. And the Salvation Army church camp, and I think the second one was the United Church camp, maybe the Anglican church camp, not sure. Anyway, all denominations were involved. They just went out, opened up the camp, and everybody went back to what their job had been in the summer in regards to the camp.
Wow.
It was a process that, as a volunteer, we didn't really see the decision-making. There's a great book written since called Flown into the Arms of Angels by Mac Moss. And he's a Gander local. And he was in charge of the college on that day, and they hosted flights. But he talks a lot about the logistics of it. And some of the logistics had to do with getting permissions and security concerns. We didn't know who was on those flights. As an individual, I didn't think about it. I just knew there were terrible things on the news and all those people sitting at the airport. So what could we do? And that's just the nature of who I am. We organized at the school using our telephone tree. I phoned four or five people. They each phoned four or five people, and that was how it worked. And the other schools and churches would have done the same things. The other half of my character represented on stage is Beulah Cooper. The character on stage is Beulah Davis, and she's a school teacher. Beulah Cooper was a volunteer at the Legion. Beulah got a call to bring down a tray of sandwiches. She didn't even ask why. She just made sandwiches.
And so her entry into the whole thing was just a tray of sandwiches.
Yes.
And it grew into, and I mentioned earlier what the evolution of this process was, because I know a lot of them were brought, I think, initially into the school and kind of filtered out from there. What was those few days like?
It was incredible. And I've learned a lot since, but when those people were finally deplaned, which was like the first plane to take passengers off, was 5 o'clock in the evening. They'd been on the plane for hours and hours. Some were 28 hours on the planes because they weren't deplaned until the second day. They had to go through customs and whatnot, and then they came into our international, in quotation marks, lounge, because we have no international flights anymore out of Gander except for a few charters in the winter. But they came into the international lounge, and they were met by 40 volunteers from the Canadian Red Cross, supplemented by Salvation Army personnel, and they were registered on a carbon copy paper form 2001 that fit perfectly into a fold-out Tim Hortons Timbit 40-pack box. So if it ever comes up on Jeopardy, why is Tim Hortons so important to come from away? There's all kinds of reasons, but the filing system on September 11th for the passengers on 38 aircraft was a series of Tim Hortons boxes.
I swear I saw that and I thought it was just a cute homage to Canada. I had no idea.
It's you couldn't write it, and the playwrights did write it, but that's the joy of it, is that they took true stories, the best of true stories, and stories that represent us all, because it's still uncomfortable for me to be seen as, you know, the Broadway muse, though I have fun with that. But I'm very aware that I represent my community. I represent my coworkers. All of those teachers were there for days.
I would love for you to share, too, when this musical came about, obviously much later than the actual event. You were involved early on. Tell me about the process of working with these people that were putting this musical together.
Well, I was involved early on, but I really had no clue. David Hine and Irene Sankoff came to Gander on the 10th anniversary, so 2011, on a Canada Council grant to do research to write a musical. And there was an announcement made in the school, very mundane, typical announcement made in a classroom or on an intercom. Anybody that was here on September 11th, if you want to talk to some people, they'll be in the library tomorrow. Click. That was it. We had no idea who they were, but it was the 10th anniversary and memories were fresh. Some people were getting cards from people who'd stayed in their homes. So we went to the library and we met this young couple. Like, they just seemed so young. And they still seem lovely, young, great genes. They asked different questions than news media would. So I asked David, I said, what is it you're writing? And he said, we're writing a musical. And I don't remember faces and names. I mean, it's very difficult for me. I think I have face blindness to a certain degree. But I remember thoughts, and my thought in that moment was, oh my God, he thinks this is a musical.
When I first heard about Come From Away, the musical, I thought, no, they made a musical? I mean, I think everyone's experience with 9/11 that lived through it, and Julie, you probably have a whole different perspective because your husband was on the ground, and we're going to get to you in one sec, but those of us who lived through it, it was like, there's no way I'm going to sing and dance thinking about 9/11. I just was beyond the pale of what made sense. So maybe we should take a minute, bring Julie in for a second. And Julie, you can tell us what was going on in your life at 9/11. And then maybe we can merge you two together at the point where the musical starts.
All right. So 9/11, both my husband and I were actually on vacation. But we were at home, so I was not actually working that day. But after the first plane hit, I woke him up, and he saw on television when the second plane hit. And I could not grasp what was happening, but he did immediately. So he said, I have to report to work.
Your husband is a New York City police officer.
He was a lieutenant, yes. So at the time, he was working in Queens. So he immediately reported to work. So he was not in Manhattan as everything was developing. He got on the scene afterwards. But it was just a very frightening and horrific day, confusing that day. I don't remember when's the next time that I saw him because the entire police force just stayed on for what seems like days. And then he would work like everybody else at Ground Zero, period, you know, to keep the perimeter safe because we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know if there was going to be more attacks, who was behind it, if it would happen again. Yeah. I was take on vacation for a week until I reported to work. And things were never the same again in the aviation industry after that.
Right. I remember in 2000, some friends and I decided we wanted to leave Maine, but I lived in Maine at the time, and go to New York City. And we walked into the airport with cash and bought two tickets for an airplane and got on it. Young people don't have any idea that it used to be, you could go up on the roof of the airport and watch planes land. Free-flowing behavior at airports had just ended, which as a Air Canada employee, Julie, you must have, you went from being on vacation, from before vacation to after vacation. And when you went back to work, the National Guard was there.
Absolutely. And they're still there. So the world completely changed and we never went back to the way it was beforehand. And you are right. There's a lot of people who do not understand that if they were not born back then. Mm-hmm. And are started to travel, all these restrictions that we now have.
Right. Now, Diane, when you when they made this musical about you and your friends up there in Gander who opened your lives to people who didn't even speak the same language as you, I mean, the play is fantastic. You've got to see this musical because it's so well done and it brings out so many aspects of this. But so you become, for want of a better term, famous. Right. So Diane Davis becomes a famous person and she's flying in and out of New York City all the time because she's got to go to Broadway and see the people and her people have to see your people and all the fun stuff's happening. And you're in an airport and you meet Julie. So tell us that story.
So we actually met Julie on our first trip to New York, which was for the Broadway opening of Come From Away.
Wow. Nice.
And we were supposed to fly home on Monday after the Sunday opening. And then we had gotten an unexpected invitation to see the show on Wednesday night with the Prime Minister of Canada and his invited guests.
Very nice.
Who were members of the United Nations.
Wow.
So over 100 countries were represented in the audience on Wednesday night.
How exciting.
So we were flying then on Thursday morning. And we get to the airport and we're still kind of country mice, you know. New York was a whirlwind. I've been to New York a number of times. I still haven't properly done the museums I want to do because I'm just so overwhelmed by everything else. I'm not going to go in just to tick it off a box.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get to the airport and there's an announcement made and I kind of see a little scuffle in our group and it's like, okay, I got to see what they're up to. And we go to the counter and this lovely woman is working Air Canada counter and our flight has just been canceled. So she's clicking away on the computer, not missing a beat, click, 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 and what's your name and where are you going? And, oh, you're all part of a group and da, 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 da. And she's working away. And as she's working away, because of who I am and because of who we are, we start nattering on about, you know, we're going to Gander, Newfoundland because we were here for the Come From Away musical. And it's just kind of all that's going on in our life. We're a little bit still kind of overwhelmed and wound up about the whole treated in New York as VIP thing. And she started asking questions and one thing led to another. And I think one thing that came up was about the Prime Minister and she had seen some of his security detail go through at some point. And she's met all kinds of really interesting people. And anyway, she checked with us, where did, you know, we're probably going to have to overnight. Did we have a preference? So here or there. And we ended up, we overnighted in St. John's and she worked us all through. We just had a really good customer service experience. And I slipped her a card that I carry. And it was just, you know, it was good. It was comfortable. We felt taken care of. Then we got on our flight. People are carrying us sandwiches. People are checking in on us. We get off the flight when we finally get to St. John's and there's someone at the door of the plane asking us to introduce ourselves. We just got this whole VIP experience. And I thought, man, that's nice. We got our hotel room and then we got home the next day. And it's like, wow, that was really lucky. That was really good. A couple weeks later, when's your birthday?
It was on the 26th. So it was 10 days after we 10 days after we met.
26th of what? What year and what month?
Of March 2017.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So on the 26th, I get a phone call or a message?
I sent you a message through the Facebook app. Yes.
Yes, a message through Facebook. This is Julie Dowd from Air Canada, and I'm on the train on my way home from seeing Come From Away for my birthday. And we haven't stopped since. We haven't, like, we've just become such close friends and she supported me in so many things. And this is all part of my personal belief that if somebody has the nerve to call me a secular saint, there's an awful lot more of us around than we realize. And people generally are good given an opportunity. And sometimes Absolutely. We have to create an opportunity for people to be good. But Julie and I have just developed this friendship. We don't see each other. We rarely speak by phone. It's all by text. And except for that day in the airport, I think we've only met twice other than that.
Wow.
New York when I was on a trip. And we both went to Montreal at the same time and spent time together.
Wow.
And it's been 8 years, 7 years?
7 years.
Yeah.
So
Julie, you had to cancel an entire flight to get to meet her.
Yes, that's right. That was my that was my nefarious plan all along.
So what, I just want to hear it from Julie's side. What was it like to meet the Diane Davis?
Yeah, so I had heard about Come From Away on the radio, but I wasn't sure what it was about. And that morning we had a lot of dignitaries. And also, like Diane said, we had Prime Minister security detail. So my shift had actually ended at 1 o'clock when they announced that the New York-Montreal flight had canceled. So I stayed beyond my shift to help rebook passengers. And the first group I get is Diane and her companions. And it comes at a time of the day that it's very complex to go from New York City to Gander. There's no connections that are easy. So that's why we had to she had to overnight, because there was no way to get her home that day. So it took me a while to find a solution to reroute them to get back to Gander. So we chatted, and then I found out who she was, that she had inspired a character. And there was other members in the entourage that had inspired other characters as well. And she gave me a contact, and I bought a ticket for the show when I got home. That experience like changed me after I started playing for the first time. So that's why I contacted her immediately to tell her what I had felt and what it had done for me.
How did it change you?
Well, it was very traumatic, as I said, for 9/11. And I was never really able to talk about it. Not put into words everything that had happened that day. And the musical enabled me to actually see through those feelings. It was transformative to see it the first time. As ridiculous as the premise might seem, that it is a musical about 9/11, there's very profound moments during the musical.
Yes. I think one of the things I found most, I've seen it now 3 or 4 times, I think. I was fortunate enough to see it on Broadway, and then I saw it in Pennsylvania, the traveling groups that come. And it is going to be shown or performed in Gander, Newfoundland, where Diane won't even have to break a sweat to get to the theater in August. And I would really love, Max, we should go up to Gander and go see the play.
I'll look at my schedule. August sounds, unusual travel suggestions is a thing that Kurt Vonnegut purports, and I follow that it's a good dancing lesson from God.
But some of the things that I really loved about it was it dealt with things like racism. It dealt with some of the aftermath of 9/11 that was incredibly uncomfortable for all of us, right? The people who were targeted, there were several people of the Muslim and the Sikh community, which is an even, it's a totally different religion, who were targeted and killed. There were terrible things that happened after 9/11. And this amazing show brings that up and deals with it and doesn't shy away from it. And it's really such a remarkable thing to witness that someone could take that and put it into a musical. And Diane, the reason I interviewed you first is what kind of brings us to the next little segment of the show, which is when you talk about someone who inspires you. We generally have it be who was a mentor for you, but in this case, you chose someone who inspired you. But that's because I first interviewed you, it was because you had started welcoming Syrian refugees into Gander. You had taken your experiences from 9/11 and said, what, we can do this for all kinds of folks who need us?
Yeah, I got involved in early 2016 with a local committee, Gander Refugee Outreach, with a goal of sponsoring 5 families to come to Gander. And Gander is still a small community, 10,000 people. And we started having families arrive in the summer of 2016. Our first family arrived June 29th, 4 days after I retired. So I retired on Friday, and the first family came in Tuesday night. Second family came in August. 2 families came in September. And by then, we knew that this musical, Come From Away, was coming to play at our local hockey rink. We didn't I didn't know I was a character in the musical. I had no idea that I was a character in the musical. I had seen a workshop of the musical that was done as a webcast, and at that time it was Beulah Cooper at the Legion. I knew all the other characters because they were characters in Gander. Characters as in the mayor, the town cop,
right.
You know. We'd had all these families arrive, and I messaged the playwright. And I'm not usually an asker, but I'll ask for other people sometimes. So I told her that I'd hope to take these Syrian adults to see the show. I said, I know that they won't understand the show because their English is very limited right now. But I would hope that later on it will help them to understand a bit more about the community in which they've been welcomed. I said, right now we have two families here, but by the time the show comes, the end of October, we'll be up to 8 adults and 10 children. And she wrote right back and she said, the short answer is yes, details to follow. So I got to take all of them right down to the toddlers. One was breastfeeding. We had to leave partway through the show. To see this musical in Gander. The night before the musical, I got invited to a gala dinner. No idea why I was invited. I'd helped them with a few odds and ends and weird things. So I'm seated with Beulah Cooper, town of 10,000 people we'd never met before.
Wow.
I knew her firefighter son.
So you didn't get one of those sandwiches that first day?
No, she did. She got nothing to Gander Academy. She was just taking care of her own people. Yeah. I met Beulah that night, and just before dinner started, Astrid Van Weeren, an actress from Ontario, seated herself at our table, and I knew she was an actress in the play because I was following them on Facebook. I considered myself an expert. I'd seen a workshop 3 years previously done by college students, and she said, where were you on 9/11? What did you do? And I said, well, I was a teacher at Gander Academy and my husband drove a bus. And she said, yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
That's how we do it. You know, I play you. My retirement had been all about planning to assist these newcomer families. All of a sudden, there's a pivot. And I continued to assist the newcomer families. I had a gentleman here yesterday doing an interview with the federal government to get more details about his level of English so he can do a citizenship exam. He's been working very hard. It's taking him 8 years because he's in a work situation where he's not exposed enough to learn his language. So I'm still doing my one-year stint volunteering for Gander Refugee Outreach 8 years later, and I'm happy to help them as a friend. But on one instance, we had a market selling Syrian food. And it was set up by someone else, and we put in a booth, and I get there, and there's only two tables because the people who set it up hadn't marketed or advertised. So I beat my Facebook all day long saying, boys, come up and get food. If you've already had supper, bring Tupperware, and you can have this tomorrow. And my two Syrian ladies sold out their food by 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wonderful.
But my friend Karen Rickett sent me a message and said, do you want to do a market like that up here in the Bonavista area? And I'm still trying to get everything done in that day. And I said, well, maybe. She said, the families can come. And Karen's got a beautiful motel. And she said, the families can come and they can sightsee and they can do a market. And I said, well, this time of year, this was October. I said, this time of year, by the time they do the market, it'd be too dark really to sightsee or anything. Oh, she said, well, never mind the market. Just get them to come up. We'll do some sightseeing. And of course, the rooms will be free.
Nice.
Of course.
Of course. So we took four families and I went with them. And we had just this marvelous weekend of Syrian food. I kept meeting her husband, Chris, in the kitchen. And we were both eating Syrian food out of the fridge. And that has developed into a multi-year friendship with the Syrian families. And there's some families that go there every year still. If the hotel is full, they stay in Karen and Chris's apartment.
Wow.
But through this, they decided that they wanted to sponsor refugees.
I love the respect and dignity that the people are being treated with too. That is just, I really do love that.
It's, you know, I tend to put humor places where it doesn't always apply, but I get lots of good Syrian food out of this.
Hey, hey, side benefits are all good.
Side benefits are all good. And I've met lovely people, and I've met more than Syrian people. I've met, you know, different people from different places and different foods. And I've watched Chris and Karen and what they have done to do this sponsorship. And he had this huge collection of vintage model cars. He sold them all to fundraise for these families.
Oh, wow.
He's an artist. He sold original artwork. Anyway, they have two families now. And the first family they welcomed is the sister of one of our Gander families.
Wow.
So now they have family nearby.
Now
they're cousins.
You know, a few hours away. They're in the same country.
Yeah.
They're working towards citizenship. Their children are in a proper school. And I really, like, when we met Chris and Karen first, it was we were out for a drive. I had heard of their place. I strategically planned it so we'd be going by at lunchtime. We went by at lunchtime, had an amazing lunch, and they've got this great policy of leaving all their, it's a motel, so you walk up the hallway and there's outside exits, but they leave all the inside doors open for any rooms that aren't rented, and they've got all different beautiful decor in the rooms, and you can just walk through and pick a room if you decide you might want to stay a night. And I walked through and I went, yeah, we're slowing this day down, we're going to spend a night. That's how we met.
Wow. Beautiful.
And when I took the Syrian family up for that first stay, all the doors were open. And those families were just going room to room, absolute wonder in their eyes at how beautiful it was and at the whole idea that they could just pick a room.
That's beautiful.
Not only could they pick a room, they could put their kids in another room.
Right? So the musical about Karen's going to be called All the Rooms Were Open.
All the Rooms Were Open. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I've got to take a point of order here and loop back, because this to me is, it's one of the goals of Sacred Legions anyway. You talked about how, you know, volunteering with the Syrian refugees gave you the side benefit of being able to enjoy really good Syrian food. And I think it's important to stress, we're trying to encourage volunteerism and self-care through Sacred Legions. And we talk about volunteering as if it's a chore, but it really isn't. The benefits are just incredible.
It feels to me often very selfish when I'm helping somebody else, because I feel so good about it afterwards. And I don't believe that we do things to get things back. Sometimes people will say, well, I helped someone or I did something and I never got anything back. If you're expecting something back, that's a business transaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You pay and you get a service or a product. When you need something back, hopefully it will come to you, and it may not come from the person that you helped. And I've experienced this. I've experienced this through cancer diagnosis, that when I need something, there's people who are there who show up. Oh, here they come, the tears. People who show up with, I live in Newfoundland, so they show up with homemade biscuits, homemade jam, bottled mousse. The ones who know that my liver is just fine drop a bottle of Bailey's on my bridge. And in a lot of cases, I will help someone that I know will never, ever be able to help me back, but they might be able to pay it forward. And it's little stuff. And I know people get tired of Diane saying, oh, Diane did this, Diane did that. But as a teacher, if we don't give examples and all they see are non-examples, how do people learn?
Yes.
So last week I went to pick up a piece of pizza, and the guy ahead of me used his whole deck of cards and could not get a card to work. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt in my mind that there was a problem with his bank. And he apologized to the guy on the counter, and he started to turn away. And I said, no, I'll buy your lunch. And he said, well, it's $20. I said, $20. Do you need some pop with it? Just to kind of break the ice, because there was people who had seen this all happen. And I said, I'll buy your lunch. That's not a problem. I said, you go on. Because I had visions of him, like, what's he going to eat for lunch? Or maybe he was getting that as a treat for somebody. Like, it's small stuff. I won't miss that $20. I might miss it for a few minutes when I think, oh, I thought I had $20 in my pocket.
Yeah.
But there are so many ways we can help people. And at times when we don't have time, sometimes it's a little bit of money. Sometimes we don't have money. Sometimes it's just a kind act. I remind people that if you see someone loading their groceries and you sit in your car and you think, gee, I should have helped them, you can go back. And the biggest stopper of people when it's time to help, I'm not thinking quite right now, but the biggest detraction for people in helping strangers is often the fear of being misinterpreted. If you go to help somebody, they think you're up to something. Is this really free? That's represented in the Come From Away musical when they talk about the free showers. It's the risk of being misinterpreted. And if someone misinterprets your good intentions, that's more on their experience and not your good intentions. It doesn't mean you should never do it again and try and help somebody.
I appreciate you bringing that up too, because you're absolutely right. If that's what's holding us back, that's sad. Doing good, if you have the right intentions, you know you have the right intentions, and you're doing better in the world. That's great.
But it is a really a loving thing to bring up the fact that you may feel insecure about doing it, and that's a normal feeling, and just try again. Diane, I want to take a quick minute, and we're going to just go and tell Karen that you think she's the bee's knees. And we're going to hear what Karen has to say about finding out that when you were asked to pick an inspiration, you picked her. We'll be right back.
It was an honor to be named by Diane. She is such an inspiration because she's so involved in volunteer work in her community. I really respect her and all that she does, and really thank her for doing this for me. I met Diane when she and her husband stopped in for lunch at our inn when they were touring around rural Newfoundland. We kept in touch through the years, and we were really inspired by her involvement with settling new Syrian families in Gander. In the fall of 2018, we suggested she bring them to our inn for a getaway. She brought four families, and we had a fabulous weekend together, full of copious amounts of delicious food, music, and lots of laughter. We posted a few photos of our time together on Facebook, which was how a Syrian lady in Iraq found us a few years later, in 2021. There was something about Javine's email, simply asking for help to find a way to Canada, that made us want to help her. We called her local ANC, Association for New Canadians, and the lady remembered speaking with Javine and told us about the private sponsorship program. We learned it was quite affordable, $13,500, about the price of a used car, as long as you had housing to provide. Since we have an inn, that was a fairly easy one to solve. After a few talks with Javine, my husband and I decided to go ahead and sponsor her and her young family, a husband and two babies, just 2 and 3 years old. We talked almost every day and really enjoyed getting to know them. A few months later, one of the Syrian ladies Diane introduced us to asked if we would sponsor her sister and family. We agreed we could probably swing it with some vigorous fundraising. Around this time, one of our Facebook followers, Mohammed, contacted us. He explained he and his family live in a refugee camp in Iraq, and he was desperately trying to find a better life for his children. We were so torn, but we had to tell him we just weren't able to finance it. But soon afterwards, we got an anonymous check in the mail for $13,500, the exact amount to sponsor a family of four. It seemed meant to be that we go for it, and we were so excited to let him know that we could sponsor them after all. They're like family to us now. Two of the families have arrived, the one with four children and the one with two. The only family we're still waiting for is the original family, Javine and Siamid, and their two young children. The kids love the small school here, love the ocean, strolling the beach, finding sea glass, and cool rocks. They run home from school with rocks they've collected for us and stories about their day. The baby is learning to talk now, and one of his first words is Karen, which he also insists on calling my husband Chris. It's been a great adventure so far. If this isn't nice, I don't know what is. The fathers have both been helping with the completion of the Welcome House, a two-unit house we built for them, since there's no housing available in our area. One family moved into the top level 2 weeks ago, and the second family will be moving into the downstairs apartment within a week. We have a Facebook page and a GoFundMe page, which give more details about it.
All right, that was Karen Ricketts. Delighted to have been designated by you, Diane. And you've been bringing good cheer all through this podcast. And Julie, you were the first person she mentioned for our show. It's interesting because you are a Canadian who came to the United States. And while your experiences have been obviously different from the Syrians who went to Canada, you had to be an immigrant here. So can you tell us a little bit about that experience when you came here? Was to meet your husband?
I actually met my husband in Montreal. And then when we decided to get married, one of us had to move. And so I decided I was going to move to New York. It was a major adjustment. French is my first language, so I had difficulty understanding the accents in New York, especially of Queens. And it was, although they're similar societies, it was a big adjustment to move from Canada to the United States. There's a lot of differences. But as coming from Canada, my experience was not as difficult as other immigrants, especially since I was sponsored by my husband to come to the country. And I had somebody to support me financially until I was able to get working papers and be able to get a job myself.
Right. And for many people who immigrate to the United States, coming to seek asylum or whatever the status may be, they don't have that support team that they're coming to be a part of.
And it must be very difficult to have to start a new life in a country that doesn't necessarily welcome you with open arms, right, and have to navigate the whole financial situation, get housing, get work, and establish yourself into a new community.
Yes. Now, Diane, when I wrote the story for Common Dreams about you, you and Gander had taken in more Syrian refugees than the entire United States had.
Wow.
Yeah. So can you talk about that?
It's still overwhelming. I remember our families came into Canada just before the Trump administration brought on the ban for Muslims. And I remember being very aware that if they had have landed in the United States, they would have been turned back. These are people who were out of their countries for 7 years as non-citizens living in Turkey and Lebanon.
It's almost that man without a country.
Yeah, they lived a perfectly normal life in Syria. Some of them were from big cities. They had the best technology and they all had good jobs and their kids were in school and they, you know, they had homes or they rented, and they came here with one suitcase each. Wow. That's what they were allowed, one suitcase each. To look at them now, 7-8 years later, we did welcome a fifth family just before the COVID lockdown in 2020. So we did reach our goal of five families. They're all working hard. They're all doing important jobs. Some of them are doing important jobs at ridiculously low wages because minimum wages are not high enough. Of five families, two of them are living in subsidized houses because their low wages qualify them for that. Mm-hmm. We need more subsidized housing. I didn't understand about subsidized housing until I got involved with this and realized how that works and, you know, that it keeps low income people, it helps them have a roof over their head.
Yeah. In the the housing business, we like to call it workforce housing.
Yeah.
Because when people hear subsidized housing, they think of a handout.
Yes. Or affordable housing. And Gander is certainly looking more at that too. We tend to be a fairly progressive little town. Of my five families, our five families, the community's five families, I didn't bring them as an individual, three of them have mortgages now.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
Hard to, you know, in some cases, they had some love money. People were able to help them with their down payment. In some cases, it was kind of a rent to save your down payment situation. You know, kids are in school. One is in university doing a business degree. You know, they've all got cars on the road and they've all got insurance and they're all paying taxes no matter what anybody thinks. Most of them are now Canadian citizens. And the struggle to become a citizen in Canada is that you first must master the language and pass an exam before you can even apply for citizenship. And then the exam is a written exam that is very, very difficult. I think that it should be used as the sobriety test. Pop someone on the side of the road, and if you can't get 9 out of 10 on these random questions about Canada, we're taking your license from you. But the other thing is, this whole anti-immigration, anti-other philosophy is, and you know, it's part of who I am right now. I've had 2 family doctors in the last 18 years who were immigrants. And in both cases, they randomly diagnosed me with cancer.
Yeah.
And where would I be if I hadn't have had those doctors? And where would our healthcare system be if we didn't have doctors, nurses, technicians, cleaners, people doing all these jobs in healthcare?
I have
a little bone to pick with our provincial government in that they advertise that they can't get enough bus drivers and they can't get enough school janitors, utility workers. And yet they won't let anyone apply who doesn't have a high school degree. If your school was bombed or your high school degree is in a language that is not your work language, but you have a driver's license, why can't you do the training to drive a bus, or why can't you swing a mop? These are all valuable, valuable jobs.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. I think what we did on September 11th, I was invited to that gala dinner before I found out I was a character in the musical. What really struck me that night was that this Gander Refugee Outreach Committee that I joined in 2015, I joined in 2016 when I was at this dinner to thank the movers and the shakers who helped organize things for 7,000 passengers on 9/11. Just about every person on my refugee committee was in attendance as an invitee to that gala dinner because they had been leaders in 2001. And not everyone has to be a leader. It's great to have some followers too, and some team workers and some stand-beciders and sometimes just people cheering you on. But I think more people could take initiatives. It doesn't have to be big initiatives to reach out and to stand up and to correct speech. I don't care if it's on Facebook or in a restaurant someday. Mm-hmm. If somebody says something that you really know is not right or not safe, I can shut them up pretty quick when I say, well, gee, the doctor diagnosed my cancer was an immigrant.
I love that connection, by the way.
That shuts them up fast.
You know, Diane, back when I interviewed you, you connected me with one of your family fathers, one of the dads. And I interviewed him for my food book, which I have a book called Humble Pie that just came out. And there's a brief story about him in that book because of you. And one of the things he told me was he worried. He was so worried. He was safe in Gander and he had people like you to love him and care about him. But he still had family in Syria. And he knew, this was during the pandemic that I interviewed him. He knew that the only place, the only dumpster that he could, that his family could rummage for food was the dumpster outside the hospital. It was the only place that reliably had enough food to actually throw some of it away. And he knew that in a worldwide deadly pandemic, his family was rummaging for food in a dumpster outside a hospital.
Yep.
And the fact that these people are in your community and just want a chance to survive.
And like there's a certain amount of survivor's guilt for them and they work so hard. And I remember one of the women messaging me and asking me if I had a bank account with a certain branch, certain group. And I said, yes, I did on Fogo Island. And she said, oh, never mind. And I said, what did you need? And she said, Western Union's been down at Walmart for 2 weeks, and we don't know when it's going to be fixed. And I'm trying to send money to my family in Syria. Now, this is a woman who's working for minimum wage. She said, I'm trying to find a way to send money to my family in Syria, and I can do it through that bank. And I said, well, you should be able to do it through me. I'll take you to the bank and we'll do it. So I said, but I don't know how it works. She said, I know what to do. So she went and she had her transit numbers and whatever she needed. And she had her money folded in a special way and tucked in a special part of her wallet. And so we sent it off. And we got in the car, and she said, you don't know what this means to me. And I said, well, you know, I'm just happy to help. And she said, no, you don't understand. She said, they have no money, and if they don't have money, then they don't have food, and they don't have their house, and they don't have, you know, she said, you just don't understand. She said, my brother lives with them, and he started a business, and she said, for small machines. And I realized what she meant was repairing small appliances. And she said, but nobody comes. And I said, oh, I said, because they can't afford to repair them. And she looked at me incredulously and she said, no, because they have no electricity.
Oh my God.
We have no idea how fortunate we are as Canadians, as Americans.
Yes.
The things we complain about and often complain about stuff that just, if it was thought through, makes no sense whatsoever. In Canada, there's this big thing about, you know, we're going to get rid of carbon tax. And in the meantime, we've had so much rain here in the last 21 days that the lift systems in communities east and west of here are putting up announcements that, you know, there's going to be sewer backup if people don't cut back on water use because of everything is saturated and loaded. These people don't have sewers. One of my friends told me about a house they lived in Lebanon, and there was 40 people lived in the house with one washroom.
Wow.
And we sat one night and we found it on Google Maps and we looked at the roof of the house and they said, oh, remember when the days we used to go to the beach?
Oh.
Anyway, we could talk for days.
I agree. And I've long contended that every single person needs to leave the country and go to another country just to realize how fortunate they are.
Yeah. And they can actually save money by just welcoming someone who's new to their own country and getting to know them.
That's a really good point. Thank you.
Yeah. They don't even have to leave their living room. Diane, one of the aspects that Max in all his brilliance has come up with for the Sacred Legions website and the podcast is that we ask the guests who they would recommend. If someone wants to become involved, what's the Julie Dow, Diane Davis remedial, I'm going to be a good guy class look like? What agency or group would you recommend that people could start becoming involved with and then maybe get their legs underneath them?
That's big because I've been involved in so many different things. I'm a big believer in every food bank everywhere. But I also, someone came to mind today and his name is Omar Rahimi, and he lives in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And he came here as a refugee, he and his wife. And I was lucky enough to meet him online and have lunch with him one day in Winnipeg. And he pretty much changed my life. And he has started an agency in Winnipeg that's called Hire a Refugee. And basically, you email them. There's a website, hirerefugee.ca. And you email them and you say, my backyard needs to be cleaned out. We're doing demolition at my house and I need all the garbage taken out. We need someone to shovel our sidewalks for us. This is Winnipeg, Manitoba. They do a lot of shoveling. yard work. It's just very basic but necessary physical labor. And he vets and matches refugees to these jobs to give them a basic start in getting exposure to the community, to the weather, a little bit of money. And I just think his agency is a really good thing. As an individual, he hires refugees, and he's also a big proponent and a volunteer for soccer in the community, which again brings in the whole community and includes refugees from all over the world, because soccer is the game. All you need is a ball.
Right. Yeah, it's a universal language, practically. Yeah.
It's a universal language, and it's all ages. And that's who I would give a shout.
So, can folks donate to this gentleman? I mean, if folks don't live in Winnipeg and they can't hire a refugee through his
group? I think there probably is a means to do that. And I didn't tell him I was going to do this. So I'll get him to double check and see if there's something on his page. But he would probably be able to add something if there's not something specific.
Okay, I'm gonna refocus this a little bit too. Absolutely, I want to get information on our website about Omar's operation and provide funding. That would be great. But the other part of what we're really looking for on Sacred Legions, we want organizations that welcome volunteers. So you as a community member can volunteer at these places. You can put in work for them, or self-care organizations. So these organizations that are providing help for mental health or being unhoused or whatever it is, places where people can go to get that assistance. So it seems like actually the hire a refugee thing might be more in line with that, getting self-care for those immigrants that need self-care. So I would promote it as that as much as the donation aspect.
Yeah, I think any charity that is working to give people food.
Yes.
I've passed chairperson on the Gander and Area Food Bank, but there's another organization here and I can't find it off the top of my head. But there's a lady named Brenda Anderson in Gander who just coordinates the delivery of hot meals to people. And local volunteers donate to her. They will even donate food, leftovers. They cook extra servings and they'll phone her up and say, we've got 5 portions of whatever. And she puts it on her Facebook page and it's delivered to someone, and local people are volunteering. I think any volunteer activity that people can do to get out of the house and meet somebody. And, you know, COVID has really cramped that for me. I still have a lot of COVID anxiety. But there's lots of ways to do this. Our local library has an evening where you just go up and chat with refugees to help them build their language.
Oh, what a brilliant idea.
You can take up a craft at Gander Public Library. You can take up a craft or an activity to do with them. So you're doing something while you chat.
These are brilliant ideas to be duplicated, too. These are things that can be done.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking, because, you know, not everybody's going to come to Gander and do that. Most people who come to Gander are going to see Come From Away musical.
Please do.
Joseph R. Smallwood Arts and Culture Center this summer, in its third season. Or they might watch it on Apple TV.
I did that, yeah. But I am looking forward to coming up to Newfoundland. I think that's an August trip.
I do an amazing
good.
Airport tour. I'll do you an airport tour.
We want that. We want that.
Yes.
Real quick,
yes.
We're coming up against the clock. Julie, do you have anyone you'd like to recommend for a group to be supportive of? Or?
Well, I do. A cause close to my heart is the Gary Sinise Foundation, which actually supports first responders, the military, and helps them if something happens once they put their life on the line to help other people. If they come back from this situation and they got injured during the war, during a conflict, if they need mental health support, housing, if they were so badly injured that they need adapted housing, and to support the families who may have lost family members. First responders, military, they're always there for every situation. Selfless acts, trying to help other people. So the Gary Sinise Foundation helps them back when they're back into civilian life, or to help them adapt to their new circumstances.
Yeah, another great self-care organization. I like the fact that both of you have introduced us to places where people that need help can access those resources. So yeah, it'll be a pleasure to add those to the website too. Thank you.
Julie and Diane, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to be a part of the program. It's nice to chat with some saints.
Well, I won't target your definition, but thank you very much. And I'm so glad, Julie, that you did this with me.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to meet you all, and thank you for having me.
And I want to thank all of you as well. Thank my co-host who has helped me so much with all of this. And it was really a pleasure meeting both of you. And I look forward to hopefully getting up to Newfoundland and going to a musical. But we'll see. We'll see what the finances do. But thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Sacred Legions is a production of Sacred Legions, LLC. It is hosted by Max Goller and Pat LaMarche. It's recorded, edited, and produced by Max Goller. Its original music comes from Jammin' Jamie Callan. For more Sacred Legions, visit our website at sacredlegions.org or check us out on Spotify. Thank you for listening.